Intermedia, kinetic art, to name just a few. Today, with the distance of half a century, most of these once proudly established art forms seem to have subdued to historic movements or categories in a system of genres, concepts, and techniques. Artists now appear to easily switch between media for their production, and the distinction between installation and sound art is rather a claim of reference than the objective difference in material or technique. However, after having stressed the contingency of the application of genres and art forms, in this talk I would like to focus on the relation of music and sound installation art during the times when the latter emerged. In doing so, I hope to not only shed some light on the concept of sound installation art, but also suggest some consequences that derive from the close connection of sound art and music. Sound installation originally described the technical installation for sound playback in movie theaters when sound motion pictures were introduced in 1927. Since the 1960s, the term was applied to artistic creations. In a 1984 interview, David Tudor remembered having outlined, quote, a more or less permanent sound installation, unquote, in 1966, and Max Neuhaus claimed in a 1982 interview to have coined the term in the early 1970s. Since 1976, the term sound installation has been used in press reports, first in reference to the works of Max Neuhaus. The distinction between sound installation and sound sculpture is less simple than one might think. While the term sound installation seems to emphasize the spatial aspect, sound sculpture might refer to a sound-emitting object. However, some artists refer to works as sound sculpture that lack a physical object of sculptural quality. Bill Fontana, for example, called his sound relocation pieces that utilize hidden loudspeakers sound sculptures. Hege de la Motte showed some images of his work in her talk. And here, Fontana might concede sculptural qualities to the sound itself in the tradition of Edgar Varèse. In retrospect of his work of the early 1970s, Bernhard Leitner claimed he wanted to, quote, understand sound itself as material to build architectural sculptural form, like stone, plaster, and timber, unquote. Concert and installation. While traditionally music is of limited duration and its performance can be perceived by a listener in its entirety, sound installations are potentially unlimited. The perceiver is free to move around in space and may decide upon the time and duration of his or her stay. However, the perception of sound installations is always insufficient and incomplete. The perceiver becomes a visitor, like a visitor of an art gallery. Music for celebrations and processions has been experienced in a similar way before. Eric Satie's Musique de Meublement is often considered a predecessor of sound installation art. Premiered at a concert and theater event in Paris in 1920, the audience was asked, quote, to take no notice and to act as if there was no music. The music claimed to belong to life like a private conversation, a painting, or a chair one might use or not. End of quote. It's a quote by music critic Rollo H. Myers, who actually had experienced these performances in Paris. According to Miho, a piano and three clarinets had been placed in the four corners of the room and the trombone on the balcony so that, quote, the music seemed to sound from all directions, unquote. Satie was commissioned in 1923 to write a musique d'ameublement for the study of the patron Madame Eugène Meyer. He set the piece for piccolo, clarinet, bassoon, French horn, trumpet, percussion, string quartet, and double bass. The ensemble of 11 musicians would probably not have fitted into the room. And Miho, who had arranged the commission, later commented that a gramophone recording would have served the intended purpose. However, Satie never considered sound playback. Satie's Vexation of 1893 became famous for its performance instruction to play this motif 840 times in succession. It would be advisable to prepare oneself beforehand in the deepest silence by serious immobility, unquote. Not published during Satie's lifetime and not mentioned in his correspondence, John Cage arranged its first publication in 1949. In spite of its subjunctive mood, Cage interpreted the text in the score as a literal instruction and immediately considered a complete performance. While convinced in 1958 that, quote, one could not endure a performance of Exertion, unquote, in 1963, just 5 years later, he staged a concert performance at the Pocket Theater in New York City that employed 12 pianists. The New York Times reviewed the concert in detail, sending 5 music critics to cover the whole evening. Cage recalled 10 years later, quote, I think that the experience of the 18 hours and 40 minutes of those repetitions was very different from the thought of them or the realization that they were going to happen. For them to actually happen, to live actually through it, was a different thing. I had changed and the world had changed, unquote. Cage's attitude towards music of extended duration must have changed between 1958 and 63. What was originally considered not endurable became the valuable aesthetic experience. It is interesting to note that Cage always thought of Exertion as a long concert and not as an installation. And this must have been communicated at the time when invitations and announcements were sent out, because otherwise the New York Times would not have sent 12 critics. So there were actually, five critics for 12 pianists. So there were actually 5 critics, and the review precisely gives information when which shift of which critic started. In 1964, Lamont Young premiered The Tortoise, His Dreams and Journeys at the same hall, performed by the Theater of Eternal Music. The audience was allowed to enter only after the performance had already started, which, together with the name of the ensemble, Theater of Eternal Music, emphasized the notion of a very long performance. On the occasion of another performance in 1968, this image dates from the early 2000s. On the occasion of another performance in 1968, Lamont Young explained to Tom Johnson that the piece was infinite and lasted for 4 years. Young ultimately aimed for a permanent performance setting, a dream house, quote, it lasts forever and cannot have begun, but is taken up again from time to time until it lasts forever as continuous sound in dream houses where many musicians and students will live and execute a musical work, unquote. In his dream house installations that run continuously for up to several years, Young created chords in just intonation. Even though the sounds were played on sine wave generators and synthesizers, Lamont Young held on the notion of a live performance. The piece was considered, quote, a living organism, unquote, And in recent realizations, the equipment is never switched off, but the volume just lowered for closing hours. Since analog live sound synthesis is being used, slow and subtle changes of frequency and dynamics are unavoidable, which indeed causes the notion of a living organism. Performances and recordings carry the precise date and hour of their beginning and end in their title, which further emphasizes the importance of the present now, the hic et nunc, that for Young seemed to be bound to live performance. The ideal, never realized dream house would have been a building in which musicians lived and performed with continuous live audio broadcast from the performance space to all rooms, including living quarters. Not less than 80 musicians would have been necessary to ensure continuous performance. Extended duration. At the same time, when concert performances of very long or even conceptually infinitive music compositions were staged by members of the New York experimental music community, the exponents of avant-garde theater and performance art were interested in similar matters. Alan Kaprow, who introduced the term happening in his 18 Happenings in Six Parts of 1959, had attended Cage's class on experimental composition at the New School for Social Research in 1958, where he got exposed to the chance procedures and the characterization of events in their parameters. So we know from George Brecht's notebooks that were published in facsimile print, how Cage actually introduced this idea that all events that were meant to happen in a context of performance could be controlled and characterized by certain parameters. So he started off with his usual parameters from serialism, like duration, pitch, volume, overtone structure, and so on, and extended this idea of parametrization of events to other aspects like color or place and things like that. And this seemed to be a really important and central starting point for the exponents of happening art, that they could use techniques to control or compose things in time that they were used to use for music composition to everything. So Kaprow soon applied values to these parameters that subsequently overcame the limitations of traditional theater or concert performances in terms of time and space. Quote, "A happening is an assemblage of events performed or perceived in more than one time and place. Its material environments may be constructed, taken over directly from what is available, or altered slightly, just as its activities may be invented or commonplace. A happening, unlike a stage play, may occur at a supermarket, driving through along a highway, under a pile of rags, and in a friend's kitchen, either at once or subsequently. If sequentially, time may extend to more than a year. The happening is performed according to plan, but without rehearsal, audience, or repetition. It is art, but seems closer to life," unquote, from a text of 1966. According to this paragraph titled Definition, the happening is likely to exist beyond perception. Its spatial complexity, its superimposition of unrelated actions, and especially its extended duration make perception insufficient or incomplete. The concept of extended duration has been addressed by several artists in New York in the early 1960s. Andy Warhol, who had attended Cage's staging of Exhaustion in 1963, realized the film Sleep the same year, where he observed a sleeping man for 5.5 hours. In her 3-room pieces, dated winter 1963, Yoko Ono asked performers to stay in the room for a week, 10 days, or a month. In 1965, a group of performance artists performed for 24 hours in a gallery in Wuppertal, Germany. Nam June Paik, who was among the participants, had presented his exposition of music, electronic television, at the same venue in 1963. 1963 seems to be the key year in this context. The prepared TV sets, pianos and record players did emit sound, sometimes in response to visitors' participation, but the exhibit was rather a presentation of objects than of sound. However, the title nicely addressed the contradiction of the not yet established genre of sound installation, the exhibition of music. The undertaking was based off the concept Symphony in 20 Rooms that Paik had drafted in 1961. Musical and sculptural material was meant to be arranged in 20 rooms, and the visitor should have been free to experience the rooms in any order and for any time. In his text New Ontology of Music of 62, Paik clearly drew the line between concert music, sound installation, and interactive environment. Quote, "In the normal concert, the sounds move and the audience sit down. In the symphony for 20 rooms, the sound, etc., move, the audience moves also. In my Omnibus Music number 1 of 61, the sounds sits down and the audience visits them." So this was like a guided bus tour where the audience would visit different places in the city. "And in the music expositions, the sounds sit, the audience plays or attacks them," unquote. Work and concept. Nam June Paik's Symphony No. 5 of 65 asked the performer to execute certain actions in winter, every 1,000 years, or after making love. Its duration of some 100,000 years situates the verbal score in the realm of what Paik had called reed music, quote, "music for the mind, by the mind, of the mind," unquote, of 62. Many Fluxus works exist in this domain. They are impossible to perform, or the composers like Giuseppe Chiari in the performance instructions for his La Strada of 64 prefer the imagination or announcement of an action to its realization. That a piece of art does not require its execution, presentation, and sensual perception is a concept rather alien to fine arts. It is common to music and related art forms. Where sound installation art is understood from the perspective of music composition, the concept of the score may come into play. Marcel Duchamp's Green Box of 1934 contains a note titled Sculptures Musicales that reads, quote, "sounds lasting and leaving from different points and forming a sound sculpture which lasts," unquote. While Duchamp did not realize this concept, it was reprinted in English translation in the Fluxus newspaper number 1 of 64. Still, we don't know of any realization prior to John Cage's realization for the dance Inventions by Merce Cunningham in 1989. Cage created a verbal score that contains Duchamp's text in English translation, together with some specifications of his own. The score is published under Cage's name by Cage's music publisher, C.F. Peters, New York. This example demonstrates the relation of score, concept, realization, and work beautifully. If we took Sculpture Musicale as an instruction to make a sound installation, the text would become a score. The setting would solve many problems that come with the exhibition and preservation of sound installation art. If the installation was not bound and limited to the creation by the artists, it would be understood as a realization, that is, an interpretation of the work. Of course, the artist, him or herself, may be his or her own interpreter. Still, this shift of perspectives frees the work from the dominance of the unique piece, the fetish of the object, fostered by the art market. Like with countless installation artists, contracts or certificates may specify the exact requirements and limitations of a piece, its edition, the role of historic media devices, and so on. By the way, this might also change this notion of the traveling artist circus. I mean, many installation artists make their living by traveling and installing their work, which just doesn't happen for painters who can send their paintings. With the increasingly fast changes of the context of creation, presentation, and perception of artworks over time, the use of scores in the realm of sound art might make up for the lack of tradition in this field. Lamont Young's composition 1960, number 7, the fifth B, F sharp, frequently realized as a mechanic or electronic sound installation in our days, was premiered in 1961 at the AG Gallery in New York on string instruments in a 3-hour performance. The following year, a string trio performed the piece for 48 minutes. In 2001, the composer pointed out that the piece was, quote, most effective when performed in a conventional concert setting, unquote. The score is open enough to allow all these different approaches, including the late change of perspective by the composer himself. However, as open as it may be, the score still defines the work and its limits by specifying certain elements and not specifying others. Limitations and consequences. Where no score or equivalent document of written or oral tradition exists, the work is inevitably bound to its performer or the materiality of its fixed installation. The work of Marion Emmerich is an example for the first situation where the art disappears when the performer has passed away. Adjacencies for two percussionists from 1965 is a graphic score that specifies instruments used, means of exciting them, basic rhythms, dynamics, dominant frequency ranges, and overtone structures. It also asks the musicians to send their sound that are being picked up by microphones to a changing selection from 4 speakers that are surrounding the audience. While Karlheinz Stockhausen had introduced live processing in his Microphonie 1 the year before, and Amashe was very much aware of Stockhausen's work since she had briefly studied with him, Amashe, in opposite to Stockhausen, emphasized her interest in the observation and combination of sounds. Quote, I made adjoins, and adjacencies comes from the series, so that worlds of sound could be joined. They receive each other, interrupt, interact, and bring the unexpected to each other. What previously could not have happened simultaneously in the same place, either because of distance, as in the case of countries, or within one composition because of sound levels in one room, is now possible through electronic means, unquote. Already in her In this early work, Amacher was interested in the specific acoustic qualities of the sound material observed. In the following quote from one version of the score, we find a first hint as to how she understood the terms compositions and music. Quote, "One intent of the amplification is to intensify the audibility of the rich harmonics of the composed, as well as the natural complex source timbres involved here. Thus, magnifying the music," and music is written with a capital M, "which begins to organize itself within the multi-frequency intensity fluctuations common in inharmonic characteristics, modeling in a larger scale way the singing heard when putting your ear close to a cymbal or gong. The sound material, kind of playing activity, adjacent frequency areas, individual beating tones, etc., is organized for its self-creative potential, that is, possible self-organization characteristics which autonomously emerge, producing their own rhythms and singing as a result of vowel consonant groupings. The score sets up the possibilities for finding. Explore and reveal as much as you can of the contouring you hear within the interacting energy of the material," unquote. Amacher's approach to adjacencies was not to create a fixed score to be merely executed, but to, quote, "set up the possibilities for finding," unquote. In this setting, the composed timbres simply added to the natural complex source timbres so that the composed here literally means put together or superimposed. This understanding of composition as process, as Cage put it in his essay of 1958, or music as a gradual process, Steve Reich in 68, where a musical situation or phenomenon was set up and observed without further intervention by the composer, was fairly common in the 1960s. However, Amacher's conception of music emerging in a self-organizing fashion, thereby understanding music as already present in the acoustic potentials of the sounding world, is clearly different. It especially differs from Cage's listening aesthetics that integrates environmental sounds into the music experience. While Cage was interested in listening to sounds, Amacher was interested in experiencing the sounds. In her long distance music, starting with CityLink's WBFO Buffalo 1967, Marianne Amacher addressed the phenomenon of atmospheric qualities of sound traveling over long distance through different media and being transmitted into different rooms with their acoustic characteristics. The awareness of how sounds are changed when heard from far away is already present in Thoreau when he states in Walden of 1854, quote, "All sound heard from the greatest possible distance produces one and the same effect, a vibration of the universal lyre. There came to me in this case a melody which the air had strained and which had conversed with every leaf and needle of the wood, that portion of the sound which the elements had taken up and modulated and echoed from veil to veil. The echo is, to some extent, an original sound, and therein is the magic and the charm of it," unquote. While Thoreau thought of the universal lyre as a means to catch a glimpse of the divine, Amacher introduces an understanding of music as quality of human beings that allows for a deeper awareness or even communication among them. In 1972, she played long-distance music from her studio in Boston to an audience at the Kitchen in New York City. A handout explained what Amacher was aiming for. Quote, "Long-distance music is developing occasions where boundaries of one place situations can begin to vanish. the awareness that we need not to be in the same room to make music together. Life to each other, creating energy and stillness for each other, no matter where we are. Beginning to know places and spaces like we know sounds. We became the coast, you at the kitchen, me in Boston. Our music begins, no electronic links, our own software, keeping still, walking all over. Listening for each other even though we are at a distance, letting boundaries of one place, situations, our own structures, immediate places, ourselves disappear, unquote. How does anybody perform that? Anybody other than the composer? Marian Emmerich compared her setup of having live audio transmission from different places available at her mixing board to, quote, some fantastic synthesizer, unquote. A synthesizer needs to be played. Recent attempts to recreate Emmerich's work, even those by musicians that had worked with her and those based on her archive of source recordings, are doomed to fail. I would like to present a very brief excerpt of one of these CityLinks recordings. Just 45 seconds of CityLinks number 13, recorded on June 20th, 1975, with Eberhard Blum flute performing on the pier at the Boston Harbor. Conclusion. A review is an examination and observation of a certain field, and with my historical review of sound, art, and music, I tried to point out not only certain connections between the two art forms, but also consequences that might arise for sound art from its relation to music. While moving towards fine arts, sound art seems to put at risk its foundation in the performing arts. And the performing arts approach to the work concept. Thank you.